Okay, let's begin. We're up to Mr. Cohen. Mr. Cohen.
My nose is as good as your nose.
Okay. No, no, it's fine. Okay, let's begin. We're up to. Let's do another pasuk. We did the mitzvah stuff in pasuk dalit. We learned yesterday pasuk dalit. Let's learn also pasuk hey. Pasuk hey is bachutzais. We describe it over here according to the mitzvah stuff, the description of the kingdom of Ashur in, at their height, at the height of their power when they successfully conquered and dominated the world. And we learned yesterday this very fascinating pasuk describing their chariots that go forth with be'esh piladois. We had a discussion, fighter jets, missiles, b'yoyim hachinoi, on the day when they are prepared. That's a little bizarre what exactly that means. Even according to the Mitzudas David, he also seemed to struggle. What does it mean, b'yoyim hachinoi, on the day, how do you learn over here? Mm-hmm. On the day when they prepared the chariot for war. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, of course they prepared the chariot. What does the pasuk mean? Obviously, there's something more depth, we'll see. And then we described that the Bereishim, mm-hmm. We described that they had staffs, rods that were laced with poison. Har olu, biological warfare. Okay, pasuk hey b'chutzos. Next pasuk b'chutzos yishoilelu harechev. In the street, do the chariots pride themselves? Yishoilelu is a hard word to translate. It means different things in different places. Here, the Mitzudas Sion says inyan shtus v'shiga oin. They act foolishly. They act foolishly, or they act wildly. They run around in a wild way. That's very typical in war. In war, halal. Halal is to give praise. We do it in an organized way. Chaos. Right? Chaos. It's interesting. It could very well be that this is another example of a word that can have two opposite meanings. We know that Yishrash, Yisharish, Yiskol, Yisakel, we have one word, and when you change the vowels, you can go from one extreme to another. So Hallel is to sing praise to Hashem.
We were saying Yehallelu.
Yehallelu
Hashem. Yeah. It Hallelu.
His Yishoilelu. Yishoilelu.
Right.
So I'm trying to suggest what you're saying is accurate. Is that maybe it's indeed the same. It's the same word, Hallel. And just like we find many many places when you take one word and you manipulate its vowels, you go from one extreme to the other. Mm-hmm. Yiskol yisokel. So the word yishoilelu, hoilelus is always associated with frivolity, with a life of hefkeris. Hefkeris, no order. The ultimate order, let's now use this to understand what is the ultimate order in life, is to sing, give praise. When a person gives praise, it's order. It's a recognition of where everything has come from and the obligation, the responsibility to acknowledge the gift and to thank Hashem with eloquent song and music. And indeed, Pesach, what do we do? What is the highlight of the Pesach, of the night of Pesach? This Rebbe Mechol would appreciate is Hallel. It all leads up to Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rochs, Motzi, Matzah, Borech, Hallel, Nirtza. Hallel is the climax. And what is all of this packaged in? Seder. The Lel Seder climaxes in Hallel, giving praise to Hashem. So that means Hallel is a part of order. Hoilulus, a simcha shel hoilulus. Hoilulus means chaos. Chaos.
Madness.
So, but it's the same word. How could the same word, hoilulus, hey, lamed, lamed, also be the word for halal? Well, the answer lies in where you put the dots. You take one word, you manipulate it, yiskol, yisakel, yishrosh, yisharei, so many examples. You go mikotze elakotze. Halel represents order. Today we said halal, Rosh Chodesh, Chatzi halal. Chatzi halal. But Pesach is halal, is the shleimus of halal. We said alakois, we recite it sitting down. Okay, it's the shleimus, and it's packaged within seder, the lel seder. Here, yischoilu harechev, mitzudas tov, mitzudas tzioin, enyen shetus, foolishness, vishiga oin, an error. Kuro vayischoilu biadam, ki meroif hamerutza, nira kimish dagim. Due to the intensity of their running, it looks like they're crazy. They're meshugoyim. They're out of control. Okay, they're out of control. Chaos. Indeed, you see these films when armies, when you come into it, you come in when an army enters into an area and they're not familiar with the terrain, they're lost. They're running around here, there, you know, driving up and down until they figure out their place and what the situation is. What exactly are they dealing with?
That's why you're prepared.
That's what you should be prepared, right? So today we have the advantage of technology. Sometimes they can actually, in the armies, they can build mock-ups of cities. In Tebi, when they went in that miracle in Tebi, whatever number of years ago, because sometimes if you look at the documentaries, they actually built a replica of the airport, and a duplicate. They had the blueprints. How did Israel have the blueprints? Because they built it. They built it. Isn't that bizarre? Uganda, they went and they actually built. They built that airport. They were the contractors. The Israelis were hired to go and to build the airport. They had the blueprints. So they replicated in a moment's notice, they replicated the whole facility, and they practiced. Incredible.
They do that now with Gaza. They have mock-ups of
it. Mock-ups also. If you ever have a chance to study, it's really, really fascinating. You go on YouTube, there are documentaries. And there's a lot of redundancy. Different filming agencies did their own research and spent enormous amounts of money to basically do the same thing. And I once watched two documentaries. They're done by completely two different organizations, I don't know whatever you call them, and they were very similar.
They were
very
studios.
What?
We're talking about movies.
Yeah, two different movies, not films. Not they have motion pictures as well. But I'm talking about documentaries to study exactly what happened, and they have the recreations and two different movie industries did this, and they were very similar but yet very different, and what you learn from studying these documentaries is mind blowing, it's mind boggling to see what was going on, and you learn a lot about people. The big hero, I think, was Perez. Shimon Peres, he was the defense minister. He was the defense minister, and it was his decision. It was on his watch, and he really, the way they presented, at least in this documentary, is he really sweated bullets to make the decision what to do. Really, it ate him up to no end what to do. He was all the pressure was on his shoulders, not the prime minister. Who's the prime minister? I forgot who the prime minister was at that point. I actually forgot. I don't remember who the prime minister was. But it was the prime minister's decision.
Rabin
was the prime minister?
Rabin?
Yeah?
Yeah, Rabin.
Rabin, you sure? Okay. But the one that it seems from that I recall, I don't know if I you would assume it's the prime minister, but it seems not. It seems it was
Rabin, is correct.
It seems that Rabin gave over the decision to Shimon Peres, the defense minister, for him to decide. And he really didn't know what to do. And at the end, he did it. And ever since I saw those documentaries, every time I saw him, he died already, but every time I saw him since then, when I looked at him and I listened to him talk, I had a whole different attitude towards sin.
Yeah, but they were already in flight. They had decided to save time.
That was all part of his thing. That was all part of the, we have to go through the whole story over there. But the bottom line is, it was his decision, yes or no. He sent them out, and he said, we'll see, go. Tentatively go, and then I'll decide the last second. But even to send them to go was quite a decision to think you can pull this off. The whole thing, I mean, Rahman Litzlan, you know, I always thought it was so, you know, as a child, I was very little then, but like people, you know, people living in the aftermath of Entebbe, it was like euphoria. But, you know, it was a lot of tragedy. It was a lot of tragedy. You know, obviously, Yonatan, Netanyahu's brother, but he wasn't the only tragedy. I mean, that shook up. That, the only reason why Netanyahu is prime minister today is only because of Entebbe. That's clear as day. That's clear as day. He was in America when this happened. And the guilt that he had not being there, and he came right away, but the guilt that he had, that look what his brother did, and what have I done, I mean, it's clear as day, is what triggered inspired him to go public service. And today, you know, Netanyahu is Netanyahu. He's probably the most successful prime minister, arguably, in the history of Israel. So that's only because of Entebbe, only because his brother died. So his brother's sacrifice. So his brother's sacrifice is living Hayoim right now, right this very moment, is living on. Okay? Sir Netanyahu is only in office. Mayor, did I say good? You know what I said? Sarah Netanyahu was only in office because of Yonatan Netanyahu.
She was
your wife
then, wasn't
she? No, this is his third wife. But, all right, so going back over here to this over here, we are talking about mock-ups, right? You got into the description that today we have mock-ups. Today we have satellite images. And we have technology, so today it doesn't seem like when you come into a new town, you don't know the terrain. You know exactly what's going on, but in ancient times, before there was satellite imagery, and before there were mock-ups, and before there were the blueprints to your enemy's hotel room, when you come into a new territory, you are in a state of chaos. And that's to a degree what it says over here is that the people, b'chutzos yischoilu harechef, the chariots are running around in the state of what appears to be chaos because they don't know what's going on themselves. Next word is a very hard word. Yish, da, yishtak, shekun, bir, choy, voice. Sound.
Shtika is quiet.
And we manipulate the vowels. Excellent. Another example of manipulation of the word. Shtika.
Shtika.
Will be quiet. And here we take the same word, we manipulate the vowels, excellent, superb, and we turn to the extreme opposite, to make a lot of noise. My favorite word that you manipulate is what you're not going to find anywhere else but in this year, and that is Tzion, Zionism. Zionism, where does Zionism come from? Tzion, ki mitzion teitzei sorah. In Yeshaya, it says at least twice, I think it only appears in Yeshaya, this word, Tzoyun. Tzoyun. And there it means a dry piece of earth, a land that is arid.
Tzia.
Tzia ushmama. Tzoyun. 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 Komatz under the tzadi, and I think it's a shurak. Tzoyun. Which means a piece of land that doesn't have any lachluchis whatsoever. What is you go from tsoyun to tsiyun, same exact letters. Manipulate the vowels and change the komatz to a chirik and the shurak to a cholom. Tsiyun is the complete opposite. A piece of earth that is moist, it's wet, it's nurtured. It's healthy. It's alive. It's wet. And what does it say in the pasuk? Ki mitzion teitse soira. Chazal hoy kol tzame luchu l'mayim. If you're thirsty, go to water. Ein mayim ela toira. Eretz Yisrael is a land That's wet. It's wet in Torah. Where does the word tzion come to mean this? Well, look at the same exact letters with different vowels. Tzion, a land, a piece of earth that's dry. It's dry. No, there's no lachluchas. So you see, there's another example. The classic example you'll see in every single sefer is always the word yishrosh yisharesh. I think Rashi always quotes it. Yishrosh is to take root. Yisharesh is to uproot. So here, if Colin points it out, is pointing out, they have two words here, which are, this is Nachum's unique style of language, is two words of Halel and Yishtoik and Shesika. And here, normally means Halel, the Halel represents the ultimate of Seder. And the Pesach Seder is living proof. The climax of the Pesach Seder is Halel. Halel v'hoidah. Halel. And the word Shesika means silence. Silence. And here, Siyag l'chokhma shesika. And here, we're taking these two words of Halel, we're manipulating its vowels, and it's turning into, instead of order, chaos. And instead of shesika, noise. Make noise. Make a lot of noise. Same word, instead of yishtaik or shesika, yishtak shekun. And the repetition of the kuf, repetitions always represents an intensity. Whenever you take a word and you repeat one of its syllables, it's very common. Yirak rak and adam dam. Yirak rak and dam kishkesh. Kishkesh means to make the same thing in English, because kishkesh is shesika. Yirak rak and adam dam. What does it mean, yirak rak? Yorok means green, and adoim is red, but when you go and you repeat the syllable, yirak rak, and adam doim, whatever, I'm not sure I'm saying, pronounce it correctly, there means an intensity of green. An intensity of red. So here as well, look at the beauty of the language. Yisholulu is chaos, and yishtak, shikun, an intensity of noise. Noise pollution. We never understood what noise pollution means until today. Today, we suffer greatly in New York City, like nowhere else in the world probably, maybe in China, which no one goes anymore.
What are you saying? You're saying that the car of the is
the Shesika, Rav Kalman. Rav Kalman is telling us the makar of the word yishtak shikun is shesika. Yishtoik. And now we manipulate it. The word shin tof kuf is shosak. Shtoik. Shtoik. Quiet. Shin tof kuf. Those three letters is the root word to be quiet. Shtoik. Shin tof kuf. You see that? Shin tof kuf means to be quiet. Now, we're taking the word quiet, we're manipulating the vowels to go to the opposite extreme. Don't be quiet, make noise. Then what we do is we repeat a syllable, mainly the kuf, or the shin, which is very a common technique in language, to repeat a syllable of a word to intensify it. Like yirak rak and adam dam, which now will mean yishtak shikun, means make noise. First, after we have manipulated the word to mean don't be quiet, make noise. Don't just make noise, make a lot of noise. New York City, noise pollution, one of the most popular complaints, 311. Do you know how many complaints they feel 311 for noise? It's one of the most popular complaints. Noise pollution. They have a whole department in New York City. They come down with machines to test that there's too much noise. I think they should call every single Jewish wedding. They should call 311 to come down. To come down.
After 11 o'clock.
Not after 11 o'clock. In the hall. In the hall. They should come into the hall, and it's illegal. It's crazy. Okay, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I have called.
What?
Clatter.
Okay, same idea. Clatter. It means noise that doesn't make any sense. Okay, so that's language for today. Two words. Yisholu, a lesson in language. Berachovos in the streets. Marehen kalapitim. We repeat this principle a second time. Okay, we had it before. Their appearance looks like torches. Kabirokim, like lightning. Barok. Like lightning, yiroitseitsu, do they run about back and forth? Let's see the mitzvah of it. He lets the little mitzvahs of the pasuk in the mitzvahs of Yisraelu harechav anshe harechav Yisraelu b'chutzai. It's Lord Tzeinu Vohena. The army of Sancheiriv. They come into a town. They march into town. They run up and down the streets. They run up and down like mishugayim. Yish tak shekun bor choy voice. They're making lots of noise. Gesundheit. Hashmoas kol klei zayin yashmiu. The sound of their weapons is clattering. Can you hear their weapons? They're setting up missiles. They're setting up. They're checking their weapons. You hear gunfire.
It could be like, when swords are clashing.
Or the shields, like we discussed yesterday, is that an ancient technique was when they went to war, they made noise. They would scare. Okay, psychological warfare. Whatever, all different types of sounds coming from their weapons.
Rockets,
air sirens, the sound of tanks rolling down the street, the sound of the Humvees, the sound of machine guns and weapons and swords and shields, all different types of weapons, ancient weapons, new weapons, all the same. Weapons make a lot of noise, and the noise is terrifying, because what it means is that we're in a lot of trouble. Okay, next, Marihen, the appearance of a Brechavis Kiriya. The Brechavis means in the streets, means Kiriya of the city. Marihen, Mari Peneim, Kalapita Esh, the Kalus, Mirutsasam, Kabadakim, Asher Ma'at, Tasi Game, Horus, that just a lightning, Ma'at Tasi Game, or it's very hard to see lightning. Why? It lasts the speed of light. How long does a flash of lightning last in front of your eyes? I don't know the numbers, but it's a very short time. When you see a flash of, you're driving down the highway road or even the city, you see a lightning, how long in your eye do you actually see that flash of light? Very, very short. Okay, extremely...
It's not the lightning itself, it's your image is really...
Right.
It stays in your eyes. It's called the after image.
Now the after Lilirois Hamihiros, you can barely see it. Kabarokim Yuritsetsu, they look like torches, but they look like in any new concept, a torch you can see, a torch is continuously burns. But a barok, it only is a flash of light for an instant. Yuritsetsu, it runs, it comes and goes, you can't really grip hold. Two different types of torches. A torch that you can behold for a long time, and a flash of light that comes and goes for a split second. And we've discussed this many times. Today, in the world of marketing, what is much more valuable? Radio, or presenting on a billboard. You have a billboard, you can have an image. Or you can have radio. Now, of course, you have both together. Have a video, that'd be the best. But let's say you only have one or the other, sound or sight. It's a given. Sound is infinitely more powerful in the world of marketing. When you see something, it goes through your eyes and gone. Mm-hmm. And you see something, the brain, they study the brain. There's no residual holding of that image.
Similar to an after image.
No after image. You see something, unless you enjoy it, unless it means something to you, it goes in your mind, out. Sound, the brain holds the sound for about 3-4 seconds. So when someone says something to you, that sound, that thought, that idea is in your head whether you like it or not. It doesn't pass through your brain. You may subconsciously try to push it out, but it's there for about 3 seconds. So when you listen to a commercial on the radio, buy Coca-Cola, in your head, it lingers Coca-Cola for 3 seconds. Even if you couldn't care less about Coca-Cola.
Car advertisers, they scream like crazy, you know, when they want you to buy cars. They're always yelling. I don't know why they yell more than
that. The volume goes up.
I know, there's something crazy about
that. Buy,
even the advertisements.
Jerry.
I know, there's something crazy about car advertisements, it's desperation.
My mother-in-law is an advocate for children, teenagers, to visit Poland, to visit
the camps, to visit the site. She feels
you have to see it. No, that's a different. When you go, that's different. That's both together. No, that's
the biggest sound is the silence.
Not a moment. You're not understanding what I'm saying.
No, that's a whole different world. When you go to visit a place, you spend time there. I mean, it's not a sound going in for 3 seconds. That's a life experience. Ain't a doyme, a life experience. I'm talking about an advertising. Advertising, you go on the internet, everyone goes online, and wherever you go, they flash advertisements, a million advertisements a second, right? Wherever you go, advertisement. Do you even see the advertisements? I don't see them. I cannot tell you, I'm blind. It's called ad blindness. You see, you just learn to focus on, I'm going to a website because I want the content. I want to read the news. I already been trained that when in this website, the advertisements are over here and over here and over here. I couldn't care less about those advertisements. You can flash in front of me advertisements the whole day. I'll never see it. But what do you mean you're not going to see it? I'm showing it to you. I'm sorry, the mind is able to basically ignore sight. Tune out. It's unbelievable. The mind is not able to tune out sound. When you're in the car and you're listening to Rush Limbaugh, and then he puts on a commercial, or he himself does the commercial, he weaves the commercial, that's the most expensive, or he himself weaves it into his broadcast, that they pay enormous amount of money for him to do that, then you hear it. Unless there's a really boring commercial, Geico. Like the Spitz boring commercial you can imagine, right? You hear it. You don't have a choice. And it lingers in your head for 3 seconds. But when I go on a website and I look at the website, I don't even see the advertisements. Chazal said, Einoi doime shmia liriya. Didn't say that. We always say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Isn't that what we say? It's true. Okay, to describe something, if you want to describe something to me, just show me a picture. Right? We do it all the time. Google Lens. Today, it's a whole world. Everyone has a smartphone. Take a picture. It saves you enormous agmas nefesh. Take a picture. Einoi doime shmia liriya. Seeing something, a picture is worth 1,000 words. But yet, there's another element, just the opposite, where shmia is infinitely more powerful than ri'iyah. So Chazal did not say a picture is worth 1,000 words. They didn't say that shmia is klum k'neged ri'iyah. Ein adoyme. All Chazal said is ha'iluchud v'ha'iluchud. There's something called shmia. It has its advantages and disadvantages. And there is something called ri'iyah. It has its advantages and its disadvantages. A picture is worth more than 1,000 words. It's true. Pictures worth 1,000 words. But yet, shmia echoes in your head for 3 seconds. By Har Sinai, the Chol Ha'om, Royim Es HaKoylois. They had the advantages of both. What they saw echoed. The ri'iyah of Har Sinai was a ri'iyah that echoed. Ad hayom hazeh. Today we live with Har Sinai. Normally when you see something for a moment, a life experience is different. But when you see something, there is a lack of it becoming part of you. When you listen, there's more, it's deeper. The combination is unbelievable.
A good example is, I found a very common, you look at the telephone number, you try to dial it, you forget it by the time looking. But if you read the number out loud, you go to the phone.
If you say it,
you'll hear it.
Exactly.
You'll hear it in your head.
You'll hear it yet. It's a reality. And the marketers, anyone in the world of marketing knows this secret. There's a lot to learn in the world of marketing, a lot of dirty secrets. How to play with the mind. A lot of stuff out. You wouldn't believe the stuff that the tricks that like, you wouldn't believe this trick works. You wouldn't believe that if I put a red box, a red border on an advertisement on Facebook, that the click-through rate will triple. okay? You wouldn't believe it. Michal, you're on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
You ever see advertisements on the right side? There's like a red. Why is there a red thing around that advertisement?
Focus.
No one knows why. But when there's a red little box around, a little border around that advertisement, for some reason the click-through rate is triple then. And if you put a woman, that's why I had to drop out of this business. You should know that's one of the reasons why I dropped out of this business, because this business is so dirty. And the only way, really, the rule is, you literally cannot survive unless you have on your advertisement a woman that is not dressed sneistic. You cannot compete. In the online advertising industry, you cannot survive a day unless you will put a woman in every advertisement. Because the men will only click on advertisements with a picture of a woman. This is a fact. So for a frum person who's not allowed to engage in this type of activity, not allowed to, but it's not proper, obviously, you don't stand a chance. Yeah.
But in general, the idea is to attract and direct the eye towards the message, right? It's the same thing with packaging. They go to a great deal of trouble to figure out what color, for example, of the package
exactly
will a shopper prefer to look at. And then things like height, shelf height, and all that. So there, that's the whole idea is to direct a person's vision towards something.
So in this pasuk here, this pasuk is really playing with us, because this pasuk over here says that when Sanherif came to town, look at all of the different ideas that are being expressed here that are going to manipulate our mind. In the street, yischaylu harechef, there's chaos. Chaos is very disturbing to the mind. The mind wants order. It is your person gets a very great sense of satisfaction when there's order. And this is especially true with children. When you have children, this is very important. You saw it. A child who's at home, the parents don't have to be nice. They can be nasty. They can do everything wrong in the world of chinuch habanim. But if the home is orderly, there's seder in the home. There is authority. There's a mother. There's a father. Their roles are defined. There is a time for dinner, a time for breakfast. Even if the parents don't show any love to the child, studies have shown the children can thrive. Because a child needs more than anything else. He needs security. He needs to be in a place, in an environment where there's order. There has to be order.
Structure.
And then there's icing on the cake when you add love. But a child that comes from a home, oh, we love you, we love you, we love you, and they kiss you and hug you the whole day, and everything is a big mess. The whole house looks like garbage dump. And what time is dinner? Oh, dinner, whenever it is. And this one comes in at that time, and there's no structure, the love doesn't help very much. Seder is what is very satisfying to the mind. When Sancheriv attacked Klal Yisrael, he brought into town chaos. And that chaos is very disturbing. When you go out into the street and everything is, there's no order, there's no structure to society. Bechutzos, in the street, yishoylulu harechev. The chariots are roaming, they're running around, everyone is running around. The new authority in town is in a state of chaos. That's what the mitzvah stuff of learning shot. That has a ripple effect on the minds of the people who are living at home. And then he writes, yish, what else do they do? Sound, noise pollution. They go and the someone is like, hear the siren over here. It's a very disturbing sound. It's a weather you can't enjoy this. It just irritates you. Yishtak shikun berchovos, and then they're going to start they're going to start affecting your eyesight. What images you see. And what are the images? We start Marehen Kalapidois. Lapidois torches. Now, lapidois means a sustained, the torch is a sustained image. And then there are flash images. And these are things which obviously, these are different types of images, a sustained image of a torch, which obviously is not a very pleasant thing either. And then there's flash images, it's a shocking, frightening. So here, this pasuk clearly is coming to deal with psychological warfare. The previous pasuk dealt with biological warfare. Okay, the previous pasuk was v'habiroishim horolu, the sticks were laced with poison, biological warfare. And then before it says the chariots, they came with speed. Okay, whatever that refers to, mogin giborim me'adam. We discussed that the clothing was drenched in blood. Their shields were dripping with blood. And they went forward on the day that they prepared for war with great speed and haste. Then it was biological warfare. And this pasuk describes the psychological warfare that they inflicted upon Klal Yisrael.
I just want to pasuk hey describes exactly what Gideon did to the armies of Midian. What happened there? He had 300 people. That's all. Midian were hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands. And he came there with Kadim, Lapidim, and Shofarot, those 300, okay? So what did they do? The Kadim, he told them like this, take the 300 Kadim, smash it on the floor, like in the middle of the night. The Lapidim, you just do
wave,
like this.
Wave.
Lapidim.
Sound, and sight.
Sound, and then you, talking about Shofarot.
Chaos.
Shofarot. 300 shofarot, you can imagine the sound of
chaos,
that.
Psychological warfare.
They smashed the thing on the ground, so the army of Midian got up from sleep and like
chaos.
They threw the thing and they killed each other there. That's exactly what
exactly
what
psychological warfare. Exactly
300 people. That's all.
All the 300 people to create their chaos.
Still was a nice. You can't
say that. Yeah. The shtadlus to create a state of chaos to deal with, to weaken their mindset, their frame of mind, through these techniques. They were a lot more advanced than will ever be, the ancient people. They understood the koyach of all the things that today they do today. They knew a lot better than we do. Yeah.
The Germans, when they did the Blitzkrieg, they used the Stuka bombers, which wasn't the greatest bombers, but it had a microphone with
psychological warfare.
Whistle made a lot of noise.
Right.
Like a
the whistle. Right.
Went
right.
From the army to the civilian.
They were experts in this. Right. That was their expertise of the Germans of the psychological warfare, the starvation, like we know this, the concentration camps. Starvation. It was known. They had plenty of food. They had studied. They had plenty of food to feed the people very well, but they knew that if you feed them well, they'll revolt. They'll be like Warsaw Ghetto. They'll rise up. When a person is starving, they don't have time. They don't have the presence of mind to organize and to rebel. It was psychological warfare. Unbelievable.
They learned this from the Russians too.
Learn from the Russians. Okay, let's finish the Mitzudos. We finished the Mitzudos. Now let's see Rashi. Let's see Rashi. These two Pesukim back on page Pasuk Dalit, on page 552 Pasuk Dalit. The Mogim Giborim Me'adam. The shield of Giborehu, of their warriors is dripping with blood. Mogim Giborehu. Now Rashi learns not like the Mitzudos David. Everyone now is going Lishito Sayu. The Mitzudas David learned that these Pesukim are describing the kingdom of Ashur. Rashi learned that this pasuk is describing Nebuchadnezzar. He's telling us what's going to happen in the future. Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and going to take out Ashur. We're describing now retribution. Ashur will be defeated by who? Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar had Sodim al Ashur. Me'odomim heim. Notice over here Rashi added two more letters. And that's why they very cleverly in the art scroll, they used the fans to show that Rashi took the word me'odom, that it says in our girsa, and Rashi has a mem, not an en mem, but an opening mem, and two more letters, me'odomim heim, the anshe chayil shaloi mituloim levushe zuhairis, the soldiers are wearing clothing that shines. Now we have to remember the Mitzvah stuff. It said when it said that their clothing are red, he's explained their garments are drenched in blood. That's not what Rashi says. When I actually translate, I said something like this. It means that they wore colorful clothing. They wore uniforms like the Civil War,
the
Red Coats, exactly, the British. Yeah. They fought with, they didn't wear camouflage fatigues. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be seen red, like a bull. You want to provoke the bull? It's very funny. I tell you, it's very funny to us.
Because they don't see the blood when they get wounded.
Right.
That's why they wear red.
Like a doctor wears white, so he should see any stain on his garment, any bacteria. So they wore red. You're suggesting the reason why they wore red so that when they get dirty blood, the blood should not stain their clothing?
Well, they get wounded, they
it's hard to me to accept that. I hear what you're saying. I hear that idea. That's not the reason why they wore red costumes when they went to war. It was just fancy. It was show-offs. Whatever it is. So Morgan Givrei Me'odom. So Rashi does not mention blood. What? Yeah. Made good targets. That was. There's something to that. There's the dignity of war. Okay, you fight. That's right. Know your enemy. Know who I am. I'm right in front of you. You can recognize me. I'm in my uniform. Okay, I'm not gonna be a coward. I'm gonna go hide in a bush and get dressed up like a tree. What kind of war is that? You get dressed up like a bush, like a tree in a bush, or you sit in a bunker in Arizona with a joystick and you go and you take out terrorists? What kind of war is that? You're a coward. You sit 6,000 miles away in a bunker and you're drinking a cup of Coca-Cola on a joystick, like a video game, and you're shooting down enemies. It's comical almost. Baruch Hashem, we're the ones doing this, not the other way around. It's a different world today. It's a very different world today. And Sheikh Hasar over here, take note that the Rashi learns Levushei Zohiris. He does not say like the Mitzudais that their clothing was drenched in blood. They wore red garments. Next words of Rashi on page 554. Be'esh peladoi sorecha b'yom hachinoi. B'yom ahu meichin atzmai lotzei spatzava mitzach tseach rechev barzal. They would polish chariots of iron shaloi. Be'esh Pilodice with they would shine it. The word mitzachzech means to shine. Be'esh pilodos in brackets. Rashi says v'lo yadati mahu pilodos. I don't know what this means. Rashi is very humble all the time. Rashi, when he doesn't know, he says I do not know. V'omer ani shehu min. I guess when he says v'lo yadati, I think what he means. I think this is a very powerful limit of Musa. I think what Rashi means is Rashi, when he says v'lo yadati, means I have no tradition. My teachers did not tell me. Right. And Rashi is telling us, everything that I know, I'm just a student. And to the point where he says v'lo yadati, I do not know, I'm a nothing. I am just a student of my teachers. And if my teachers did not tell me, who am I to go and on my own right away to say, I'll tell you what the pshat is. First thing is, v'lo yadati, I did not receive from my teachers a tradition as to the meaning of this word. And therefore, who am I to just right off the bat to say what it means? First thing, let me lay out v'lo yadati. Now, I am a human being and I do have a right, maybe later in life at some point to be machadesh. So let me make a suggestion. The Oymer.
He still doesn't know.
He's still vacillates. The Oymer Ani. Shumin Hamitzach Tzachas Barzel Yafe. It's a certain type of polish. It's a certain type of polish, a very high quality, what do they call today? All the silver, the leichter, they have all these different types of things you can buy to polish. No, lacquer is not to polish. If they dip you like their lacquer, you'll never have to polish it again. That's what a lot of the women do today. They don't want to polish.
They
ruin the value. They ruin the value. So now they have new things. You don't ruin the value. You have all the technology. You go to Grand Sterling or Hatzarfim. You have to get a tour. Today we have to go after the show, get a tour, going to Grand Sterling and have them explain to us the depth of what these words mean, the different types of polishes that they use to beautify different types of metals, but he writes here is a certain type of polish, high quality polish. The Omer Ani Shehu Min Ham Sach Sachas Barzil Yafe. A polish, right? That's what it means. A polish that polishes iron. The Ein Poishin Peladosh. Don't be inclined to learn like the other commentators that will tell you HS Lapidos means a torch. Peladosh Lashon Lapid Eish Kederech Hahe Pech. What do you mean Kederech Hahe Pech? It means because the letters are out of order. A lapidos is the lamid comes before the pay. It says pilados. It should be lapid. The lamid is not in the right place. Pilados, if really this refers to a lapid, eshes lapidos. Devoira was eshes lapidos. So there the lamid comes first. Lamid pay dalid. So why should that be a problem? We have many words where the letters are interchanged. Keves, kesev, salma, simla. So that's called a word, a mila, hahipoch. A word where the letters are out of order. So that never held us back. So why can't we take this word of pilados and add it to the list? To the list of words that make a vocabulary. We should collect all these words, add to the list of words called Kederech Hahe Pech. No, Rashi says I don't like that pshat. Rashi does not feel comfortable doing that in this instance. So therefore, he wants to preserve it the way it is, and therefore he's stuck because there is no precedent for this word anywhere in Tanakh, and you have to judge it based on the context. And the context here, the only thing he can suggest is it's a polish that polishes the chariot. And why would he want to say that? Because we have this very unusual expression here, which is a very big mystery. Biyoim hachinoi. That's a very bizarre expression. That on the day when they prepare the chariots. What? Since when? We have a whole Tanakh wars. The whole Tanakh is full of wars. One war after another. Shaftim, Shmuel, Malachim. I mean, you mean, you can't even count, you can't even tally all the number of battles. Since when did ever go say, when on the day when they prepared the weapons for the war? Of course, that's a given. When you go to war, you have to be trained, you have to go to West Point, you got to get a degree, you got to have basic training, and then you have to rise in the ranks, and you have to know how to assemble and disassemble a weapon in your sleep, blindfolded.
Right.
So what are you talking about over here? All of a sudden, b'yoy ma'achino, mandekar shmei.
It's fleshing, but it's fresh.
B'yoy new.
Later on, it gets dirty.
It's worn out, dirty.
So you don't see the.
Yeah, but that's war. Every battle in Tanakh, you have that. All of a sudden, here we have b'yoy ma'achino. So it doesn't really answer the question, but being that we do say b'yoy ma'achino, and then it says in the beginning about the chariots. And it says be'esh pilodois harecha b'yemachino. From the context, if we're already going to discuss the preparation, we're going down to the factory. We're going to go down to Detroit, where they make some of these. Do they make them in Detroit? Some of these weapons. Where's Boeing? Where's Boeing located?
Seattle.
Oh, Seattle. Okay, Seattle. So when you want to go there, everyone here has a big bucky in these things. I see. You have a secret life here, making weapons. So you go to the factory, there they have special polishes where they make the weapons look nice and shiny when it comes out of the factory. This is Rashi's very interesting parish, Be'esh Pilados. It's a certain type of polish that they use on the Horechev, B'yamachino, in the assembly line in the factory when they prepare these chariots. Unbelievable Rashi. Again, not like the Mitzvah David, who says the word Pilados means fire. And the Mitzvah Stavit obviously learns that this is a word that says hefech, where you change the letters, like Salma, Simla, Keves, Kesef, Paroches, and that's interesting. That's not, is that really? I hear what you're saying, because that's the Kasha. V'nasata es ha-paroches al ha-arayin. But all the Mefarshim pretty much say it means, you're saying a Chiddush, you're saying a tremendous Chiddush. Someone says this, or this is your own?
I don't know.
I accept.
I don't remember.
But my answer is a good question. This week's parasha, it says, "V'nosata es ha paroiches al al oroin ho edus. So you will put the paroches upon the oroin. No, you don't. You hang up the paroches vertically in front of the Kodesh HaKodashim, and the Aron is in the center of the Kodesh HaKodashim with the Badim sticking out. It doesn't go above. Doesn't. What does it mean? Oh. So Rashi, no, that's the Kapoires.
Yeah,
the Kapoires is the Kruvim. The Kapoires, but it says already in the Pasuk there before that you will put the Kapoires upon the Aron. And then it says, now you'll put the Poriches. The first one already said, I think he said it before. You already said it. And then it says it again. So forget about it. Forget about the repetition. But what is the pshutoi shel mikro v'nosato es haporoiches al aroin hoedus? So Rashi very quickly says, al means, Rashi says, b'somoch. Right. So Rabbi Mayevsky says, wow, come on. Why do you have to go and say al means b'somoch? Al means literally above. And when it says the poroiches, it doesn't mean the poroiches. It means the ka poroiches. Change the chaf and the pei. How could you do such a thing? Well, there's something called simla and salma. There's something called keves and kesef. And according to the Mesudas David, there's something called a pilodos, and there's something called lapodos. Lapid. Lapid and pellet. So, this is from the category of words where you interchange the letters. So why can you say the same thing there? It's a brilliant answer to the question. There are other loose ends you're going to have to figure out, but it's an idea. It definitely an idea. He's saying he is working with something very legitimate. You can't just shoot this down. And in a Hanami, maybe take out...
You can't make it up
100%. 100%, but there's a starting point to look now in Rishonim. To study the Risha, maybe there is someone that alludes. You gotta go look. Take out the Oitzah Chachma, and you type this in and look at the other Rishonim, and you look. Even though I had a whole speech from someone yesterday. Gave this whole speech yesterday. Who is it? Who gave me this speech yesterday about these Rishonim? Today we've uncovered a lot of new Rishonim. A lot of new Rishonim. Yeshiva boy today, they come, they have Oitzah Mefarshim. You ever see these things? So they have a lot of Rishonim that you never heard of. When you were in Yeshiva, what did you have? A Rashba, a Ritva, what else? I don't even know what else. What?
The Ran,
that's in the writing of the Gemara. The Ran, the Rosh, the Bali Taisvis, the Rashba, the Ritva. How many Rishonim did we have when we learned Gemara? Very, very few. Today, first of all, the Meiri is new. The Meiri, no, the Mordechai is the real deal. Mordechai is very cryptic. More of a halacha sefer. Meiri is a new sefer.
Mm-hmm.
Meiri was discovered.
Right.
It's a new sefer. No, I don't think
no,
in the Vatican.
It was the
and the Meiri, it's full. There's nothing missing. And it's written so well. And it's so thorough. And it's so delicious, the Meiri. But yet, the Meiri is not a traditional Rishon. And the Meiri says a lot of Chidushim we never heard before. And the question is, how seriously do we take what it says in the Meiri? And not just the Meiri. Okay, I give you a little. Today, there's a long, long list. They're coming out every single day. They have manuscripts of Rishon that have been discovered, that have been hiding, and this and that. And they're resuscitating many Rishonim. So the question is, how much time is short, life is short, how much should a person invest in studying these Rishonim? Because the truth is, we really don't know much about them. In fact, some of these manuscripts were in Geniza. Why were they put in Geniza? Maybe the author wasn't so...
kosher?
Well, who's to say? We don't know anything. One thing we do know, there are certain Rishonim that have passed the test of time. They're part of the Mesoira. They're part of the Mesoira. These are the classic Rishonim that have been studied by our fathers, our grandfather, great-grandfather, all the way back to the time when they were actually written. And there were other great, great people, but their works were not studied. Their works were put aside, and they came about later on. Now you can say also the same thing about the Maral. The Maral was also in hiding for how many years, Amichol?
Really, from say 1600 to pretty much till Rav Kook.
Okay, so that's 400 years. So, but Maral is not a halachic work. It's not a work. It's more of a hashkafic work. So it's different. It's a whole different. And we know who the Maral was. It's an Achron. It's a different. You can't really compare. Maral is an Achron. It's a whole different. I'm talking about the Rishonim from the Rishonim. So this is a side point. When you deal with a new Rishonim, I found in a footnote. In the Masoret Rav Kook, they bring down a Rishon we never heard of before. He says this pshat in the pasuk. Very nice. It's a very beautiful idea, but don't take it so seriously. It's like what I would say on a Friday. Don't take it so seriously. Don't take it. It's very nice, you know. It's a nice idea. It's drush. But to say this is the pshat in the pasuk, it's a dangerous game. We've never heard such an idea. V'nasata esha paroiches al aroin ho'edos. Rashi says al besomoch. It's a beautiful idea. Paroiches is kapores, but we've never heard this before. To go search in the Rishonim, dangerous game. Even if you will find a Rishon that says this, an obscure Rishon never heard of, you know why he's obscure you never heard of? Because he wasn't traditional. He wasn't necessarily part of the Baalei Han. There's something to it. There is a very big Yisrael today to focus. Today we're going back to the basics. It used to be a big deal. Oh, they have a new Rishon. They just published a new Rishon from a manuscript no one ever saw before. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of that, a lot, that too much. And now there's a return. You know what? Let's go back to the classics.
Return to normal.
Rav Moshe Feinstein did not look. He learned very few Rishonim. His Piskei Halacha are based on Mamish, a handful. There are very few. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rosh, the Ran.
He treated himself like a Rishon.
And then he looked and he studied very, very few Rishonim. I don't think he ever looked at a Me'iri. I don't think he ever touched a Me'iri. I can't say for sure. So, you'll say, but how can you pass? Can you go a whole long tshuva? But the Me'iri says, fakert. You're basing your psak halach on Tosfos and the Rashba. But the Me'iri. Look at this Rishon that just came out from the Masoret Rav Kook. They published this new manuscript. It's not part of the Masoret. It's very nice. Psak Halacha has to go down through the channels. You got to go through the system. You can't. It's very nice. It's beautiful. It's a nice pilpul. But Halacha, Piskei Halacha, no, that far you can't go. Okay, let's go further. So this is a very good rule of language of the Habarei Shim, Har Alu. Now we come to the poison. Okay, it was laced with poison. The sticks, Tirgim Yonason, V'Rabonei Mashir Yosoin, Misarbalin B'Tziv Oinim. Now this is a new interpretation. He does not learn the word poison, like the Mitzudos Tzion, Har Alu. The Rabonei means the staff. Okay, Rabbonei.
What?
No, I'll tell you that. The leaders of their companies, the leaders of their companies were decorated with colored clothing. The Rabbonei means a rough. Rabbonei Mashir Yosa means their camp, of their encampment, their company, were Misarbalin decorated B'tziv oinim, with beautiful colored clothing. In other words, you can tell who the colonel is. Who the general is. What is the translation? you have the translation there from the Judaica?
Yes, but I already know that the word Misarbalin, it means like a cloak or an overcoat.
So how does the Judaica translate this word, these words of Rashi?
The leader of the camp, of the company.
Okay. The company.
In Rashi, similar to the necklaces and the bracelets and the shawls, all.
Yeah, well, how's the first word? How does it? Rabboni, Rabboni, Mashir Yosain. How does he translate those words?
The necklaces and the bracelets.
The Rabboni? No, no, that's later. That's further.
That's
the next Rashi. That's the Rashi Har Olu. Mu'utafim v'domeloi hanetifois v'hashay.
The camps are enwrapped in
covered. Say it again. One more time.
The heads of the camps.
Okay, in the general, like what we said. Okay, the camp. Mashir Yosai means the camp. The company. Okay, an army. The battalion. The company. You have a company. You have a group of people. The enemy, Nebuchadnezzar, has arrived. Nebuchadnezzar is now about to obliterate the nation of Ashur. He has arrived, his army has arrived. The army is very colorful. The army is, they're organized in different camps, different battalions, different groups, and the leader of each group, a general, a sergeant, a colonel, all of the high-ranking officers in the army, they are, you can immediately identify them by their clothing, by their garments. The Rabboni, the leader of Mashir Yosain, Misar Belin, are adorned Bitziv Oinin in beautiful colored clothing. And then he explains the word Har'olu. The word Har'olu means dressed up. They are Me'utafin. Me'utaf, you had this in Daf Yomi 2 days ago, that one of the 10 things a Koyshal Bracha needs is Ituf. You have a Koyshal Bracha. A Koyshal Bracha needs an Ituf. What's Ituf? What does the Gemara say? A head covering. When you bench,
like an envelope.
To a covering. That's what Har'olu. The Doimeloi, where do we find it? Where do we find a precedent for this? What in the world does the word Har'olu mean, a covering? The Doimeloi, Hanetifois, Fahasheros. Sheros means necklaces, Nitifois, I don't know what that is, some type of ornament. The Har'olois. And this is describing the 24 Tachshite Kala. Okay, this is a very popular pasuk. This pasuk, how do we know that a kala wears 24 ornaments?
It's a jeweler.
And by extension, a Talmud Chacham is a kala, has to know the 24 Sifrei Tanakh. There are 24 Sifrei Tanakh corresponding to the 24 different types of ornaments that every kala is supposed to wear. Now, today's day and age, we don't even know what they are. Now, where are they? Where in the world are the 24 ornaments listed? And the answer is in Sefer Yeshaya in a negative way. In Sefer Yeshaya, Yeshaya says that you people, you're done. You're finished. You're gonna suffer. And he goes on to say that all of the ornaments that instead, it really describes the body parts, instead of this ornament going on your neck, there'll be a scar on your neck. Instead of the earrings going here, your ears are going to be, you know, whatever, you're going to have. We only know about the 24 ornaments indirectly. Indirectly by telling us that because of our Averois, the 24 ornaments that are used to put on our body are going to be removed. Removed, and our body will be damaged to the point where we won't even be able to put these ornaments on. And there the Pasuk lists all of these things, and the truth is it's not really clear how to read the Pasuk. You know, it's like the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim. You ask someone, tell me, what exactly are the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim? You're in a lot of trouble. Because there are only 20 opinions of how to fit the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim into those Vayavar Hashem Al Panav Vayikra Hashem Hashem Kilrachum V'chanun. You're in a lot of trouble. Try to figure out, break up the psukim, the pasuk, into 13 parts. And likewise, in this pasuk, there are 24, supposedly 24 different, or there are 24, there are 24, but it's very hard actually to break up the psukim to define what the 24 are. And then even if you'll be so clever to figure out what they are, try to translate them. Like the word over here, hanetifais. What is that? What does it say there in the Judaica? The first one in the list?
I don't want to confuse them. Yeah. the necklaces and the bracelets and the shawls.
So the neck, the he tied his nitifa is a necklace. Hasheros is a bracelet. And here's what we need for our discussion. Hor olois, a shawl. A kala wears some type of shawl. Okay, we're not, kala. Okay, we're not familiar with all of these, we're not familiar with the details of all of these different elements. Mm. I once had the chutzpah to ask Rabbi Avraham Shur, he once gave his gear, I used to go to a shir every Sunday, back in the day, and he was discussing this at great length, this topic, and he was talking about learning Tanakh. A Talmud Chacham has to know the 24 Sifrei Tanakh, and corresponding to the 24 Tachshitei Kala, and he was discussing this pasuk and trying, so then I said, after the shir, I said to him, could you maybe explain to us each one of the Sifrei Tanakh,
oh,
to what ornament does it correspond to? Like, if the word sheros means a bracelet, so define which one of the Chof Dalet Sifrei Tanakh is the bracelet. Which one of the 24 Sifrei Tanakh is the netifas? Which one of the Chof Dalet Sifrei Tanakh is the Hor Olois, is the shawl? So he looks at me, and he says, I have to think about that.
Accessorize.
Ooh, okay, very good. Now today there's a kala of 24 ornaments. Outside. This art of the 24 is lost from us.
Ornament of the Urim and Tumim.
The Urim and Tumim? What about the Urim and Tumim?
Diamond. Different.
The Kohen Gadol, yeah, when you want to say a Kohen, also wears 24 things. All right, maybe you're saying an idea that...
I want to say, Rabbanei Mashir Yoten,
yeah,
it means the generals that they are going to be leader for those army that they have Shiryon. As a Goliath was...
They have Shiryon, they have the scales.
Special.
Of armor.
Okay.
So you want to say the word is Rabbanei... I hear what you say, but I don't think that's the correct word. That shiryon is a Hebrew word. The word mashir yosain is an Aramaic word, which is a very common word, in fact, in the Targum. It's used very, very often, and it means a machane. It means a camp, an encampment. And here it refers to Pashup Shad. I hear what you're saying. You're saying an idea, but I don't think that's the translation over here. Maybe, but okay, let's leave it that. You're saying good, but I hear the idea, but L'chor V'Sar means. Okay, anyway, we have over here, V'loshem Mishnah, V'chaninu, Modiyois, Reulois. Now, what is that? I don't know. Modiyois, Reulois, I don't know what this is. Is it Mevchal? You know what this means?
Yeah,
this means
shawl.
A shawl from Modiyois, Reulois, B'mesech the Shabbos. Okay, I guess they're talking about the halacha of carrying on Shabbos.
No, here he's describing women of Mordai.
Mordai, okay.
Wear these
shawls,
clothes, whatever.
Clothes on Shabbos.
Maybe something wrapped around.
Okay. So the women of Mordai, porasu Mordai, the Mordian. Modiyois, Reulois, these women of Mordai who wear these shawls. So you see again this word over here means a garment, does not mean poison. So we have a fundamental difference in the Mitzvah. The Stavin Rashi as to the translation of the Pasuk of the Habereishim, Hor Olu. According to the Mitzvah, the Stavin, it means a staff that is laced with poison. According to Rashi, the Bereishim refers to the Rosh. The Rosh, Miloshon Rosh. That's the key words, the Reish, Shin, Rosh, the leaders. The leaders are enveloped in beautiful garments to make them noticeable who the leader is. It's very important to know who the leader is. Take him out, right? You got a missile. Or who you want to negotiate. That's one of the complaints. I've told you many times, that one of the complaints the police department has here in Flatbush is when they come to a scene, whether it's a crime scene or an accident, Rahman Litzlan, they want to talk to an authority of the community. Who is the rabbi? Everyone is the rabbi. Mm-hmm. Every yukul is the rabbi. Mm-hmm. Everyone is the rabbi. How many rabbis can there be already? They demand, one of the things that the police department, the government demands, that when they deal with the Jewish community, is there should be clearly defined who is in charge. Just like amongst them, you look at their sleeve, you know, you right away, who has the stripes? Who has the stripes on? You see a police, you see an officer walk down the street and he has on his sleeve. He has a, not a shoulder. Stripes. There are stripes on the sides. Besides that, that's in the army, but they have here are two stripes. Pay attention. Don't chop it with him. He has a lot of authority.
That's his rank.
And you'll notice all of the other rookies, all the other cops who don't have, when he walks into the room, they get scared. They right away have a lot of respect because he's the boss. He's the boss and he makes decisions and that affect their lives. So when he walks into the room, he pay attention. So they demand, just like by them, they know who is in charge. When they come to a crime scene or an accident scene and they have to deal with the community, they want to know who's in charge here. Everyone has a beard, everyone has a hat, everyone looks like a penguin. Everyone is the same. Who's in charge here? So you see over here, we learn the Goyim. They knew, they according to Rash interpretation is, the leaders of the enemy were clearly defined. And that is a Milo. That is considered to be, I mean, in the Ruchanetzar, he's coming to destroy Asher. That's considered to be, they know what they're doing. They're coming, they're organized. They're organized and coming to destroy the nation of Asher. Okay, we're out of time. We have to do the Tumah of the Rashi, the next Pasuk tomorrow.